You're listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. Today's show, I really was scratching my head. There's no real news story that's grabbing me. And I definitely do not want to talk about Obamacare, because that story does have legs and it'll be in the news for at least another year, if not three. So I want to get off Obamacare. But there's one thing that has been in the back of the mind, and I need to give you a little background. If you listen to the show, you know my political philosophy is that of a classical liberal, or what in the United States is commonly referred to as a libertarian. Libertarians primarily, they have a number of kind of core tenets. One is fiscal responsibility, which means balanced budgets, but it's not just balanced budgets for balanced budget's sake. It is limited government and limited by the U.S. Constitution. The problem we have in Washington, both with the Republican and the Democratic Party, we don't have limited government anymore. It's gone, folks. And if you don't believe me, every year for the last 12 years, we've run massive deficits. And they've gotten bigger and bigger and bigger. And now, yeah, last year, the fiscal year that we just ended, September 30th, 2013, it actually went down, but down to what? To $688 billion. And I'm not what most libertarians want. And many libertarians are part of the Tea Party movement, but not all of them are. But what the Tea Party movement wants and what libertarians want is a much smaller government in terms of its size and its scope. If we're up to the libertarians, we would not have had Obamacare at all. It's simply not the responsibility of the federal government. And what Obamacare is really a good example of big government run amok, where we had a perfectly functioning health insurance market and the government has destroyed it, has eliminated it. And that's why millions and millions of people are complaining. Now, I said I wasn't going to get on it, but that I'm using just as one example of how big the government has gotten. And I always need to remind you, for most of the entire history of the United States up until 1930, 1933, the size of the federal government was less, if you measured it in terms of gross national product, was less than 3%. And the only time it would go over 3% was in time of wars, either the Civil War or World War I, World War II, as well as the Vietnam War and the Iraq and Afghanistan War. Prior to that, in most peace years, the federal government was largely smaller than the state governments relative to GDP. You see, a student asked me, well, which presidents do you admire? I said, well, for this century, Calvin Coolidge was a great president. We had unemployment rates on average for 6 years of 3.3%. Let me say that again, 3.3%. And the economy was booming in the 20s. That's what they call them, the roaring 20s. But the federal government was small. It started to expand with a Republican progressive president, namely Herbert Hoover, and really expanded under FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt. And it's continued, whether it's been a Republican or a Democrat. The problem is both parties have been parties of big government, huge government. I'm not saying there's not differences between the two parties. There obviously is. But my focus is on results. Anyone can talk a good game. I'm for a balanced budget, or I'm for a limited government, or I'm for a constitutional republic. But can they deliver the goods? And the problem Tea Party candidates have is you have a Republican establishment largely based in Washington, D.C., that doesn't doesn't want the Tea Party. They're trying to co-opt the Tea Party and have been, to a certain extent, successful. They didn't want Senator Ted Cruz to run as senator. They definitely didn't want him elected. And they're doing their best to marginalize him. Yet he was leading the charge for spotlighting the problems with Obamacare. You see, the biggest problem with Obamacare, its impact on employment. We have divided government. Nothing really is going to change. We have gridlock. Nothing is going to change until 2014, and that might not be dramatic because let's say the Republicans keep control of the House as well as get control of the Senate. I think that is possible. But still, President Obama is in office, and he can veto bill after bill, and he'll do it. So Obamacare will be around. But you also have a number of Republicans that want comprehensive immigration reform, which I touched on the last show, but I didn't really get into the details. Well, why would some Republicans want comprehensive immigration reform? Because it truly is not in the interest of the American worker or the American citizen. It's simple. It's money, big money, campaign contributions. That's why. No secret there. Even though if we truly had what the Democratic progressives want in terms of comprehensive immigration reform, where everyone that's here today would get citizenship and become a voter, if that happens, and it could very well happen, I think for all practical purposes, that would be the death knell for the Republican Party for years. Because most, if not all, of those illegal immigrants are Democratic voters. You know, estimates are about 3/4 to 4/5 would become Democratic voters and vote the party line. They want the expansion of the welfare state because many, if not most of them, come from countries where you have large welfare states. The problem is many of those countries are poor. And that's why they come to the United States, first to get a job, but second of all, to take advantage, once you become citizen, of all the benefits, including health care, including school education, including food stamps, subsidized housing, supplemental security income. And who will be in favor of that? The overwhelming majority of illegals that are here today will be in favor of that. So why I scratch my head, why would any Republican be for comprehensive immigration reform? It's not hard to understand. That's why George Bush wanted it, and that's also why many of the leadership in Washington want it again. And they might push it through. It's rather a 50-50 proposition right now. You see, the last time under Bush when they tried to pull this, there was such an outcry from the Republican base, especially the conservative Republican base, and the libertarian base is rather split on this. Some libertarians are for open borders. I'm not. I'm with Milton Friedman. Open borders is fine if you don't have a welfare state. So the day we eliminate the welfare state, then I'm for open borders too. That day will never come. It will never come. There are too many Democrats and Republicans that are for the welfare state. So to break the code as to why not all, but many Republicans, especially in the leadership, want comprehensive immigration reform, it's simply for campaign contributions to their campaigns. And they really have no interest, or better way to say it, they really could care less what the long-term impact is to the Republican Party. It is that short-sighted. It is that short-sighted. Because I will tell you this, if comprehensive immigration reform passes, it's only a matter of time before all those people that are granted amnesty or so-called pathway to citizens get citizenship. And there'll be a lot of pressure to shorten that time period. And like I said, don't believe the 11 million number. It is somewhere between 30 and 50 million. I don't know what it is. The best organization I know that probably knows the number, but it's not going to tell you, is the United States government. They have the capability through their spy satellites the National Security Agency, and it's taking photographs along all our borders. Some of it is used to stop trafficking of drugs, but others, they know how many people are coming in. They have photographic analysts that can, over a period of time, come up with fairly good estimates of how many people are streaming over the U.S.-Mexican border. But the problem there is, ladies and gentlemen, that's at most half of the problem. The other part of the problem is you have mainly students, but you have other people come to the United States, either as tourists, students, or in business, and they overstay their visas, and they stay here. And some of them start businesses, but some of them work for other companies. And that's another half of the problem that needs to be addressed. So it's not strictly the millions coming across the Mexican border into the United States. That's, as far as I'm concerned, it's probably roughly approximately about half the people. The other half are people that are flying into airports all over the United States. Now, what's the Republican Party doing about it? The answer is very little. Now, okay, they don't control the White House. They don't control the various agencies and departments because they are headed by political appointments that are Democrats, largely. Some Republicans, but mainly Democrats. And there's not the problem is not no enforcement of the immigration laws. There's some enforcement. Some of the worst criminals that we find that are criminals are sent back. But the overwhelming majority of illegal aliens that are here are not sent back. They stay here. And the reason I emphasize this is it impacts the employment opportunities of all Americans. It really impacts those people that are low-skilled, people that are new entrants to the labor force, and that's usually young people, but not always, because you have people that are unskilled. And they don't have a college education. They don't have a high school education, many of them. And their opportunities are limited. So unless they have the fortitude, strong work ethic to start their own business, most of them are in low-paid jobs. Many would say dead-end jobs. But that's their choice. You always have an opportunity to improve your skill sets by first getting a high school diploma or going to college and completing your degree. The problem there is most of those young people today are increasingly finding it difficult to find a job. Now, you would think, given that situation, that both political parties would be in favor of rigorous enforcement of existing immigration law. No, they're not. No, they're not. And again, I'm not saying there's none, but you see, compared to other countries, the United States is by far the most generous in terms of legal immigration, where over a million people every year legally enter the United States as legal immigrants. I'm for legal immigration, but I'm not for legal immigration at that level. I think it's entirely too much. And the reason why I say that is the very, very high unemployment rates that the United States has been experiencing. Starting, really, most of the layoffs were in 2008. So it's been 2008, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. We're almost 6 years of very high unemployment rates. And there's been a slight decline in that unemployment rate. But offsetting that is more and more American citizens are not participating in the labor force. So you would think, given that situation, why would we want even to think about, talk about, spend any time on comprehensive immigration reform? What we should be talking about is enforcement of the existing laws and the deportation of people that are working here illegally. That's not in the news. You'll hear over and over, there are 11 million illegal undocumented workers here, and we need to bring them out of the shadows. And I scratch my head. Excuse me, they're not in the shadows. They're everywhere. They're not hiding. What do you mean in the shadows? That's nonsense. They're living and working here. Many are working. Many are on welfare. And their children are in our schools. Go over Dallas and you see all these part-time buildings. Why do you think we have all those part-time buildings? It doesn't matter whether it's elementary school, a mid school, high school. The primary reason is because we've had a tremendous influx of illegal aliens from all countries. And who's the sucker here? Who's paying these bills, these taxes, both locally and for schools? It's the American people. Yet who's also paying the price in terms of not having jobs? It's the American people. Yet we have the Democratic Party is completely for a so-called pathway to citizenship, amnesty. Let's cut to the chase. They want to give citizenship to anyone that made it here. Anyone. And they have a few loops that you have to jump through. You have to pay some taxes. You have to wait a certain period. And I say, and the majority of American people say, because there have been polls on this, the overwhelming majority of the American people, like three quarters, at least three out of four, want immigration law enforced. They're not in favor of illegal immigration. Now, many of these same peoples are for legal immigration. Some at the high levels, some a little less, some even lower than that. And that's an important distinction to make, the difference between legal immigration and illegal immigration. But what both political parties have done and are still doing, both in the Senate and the House, is to ignore the will of the American people, totally ignore the will of the American people, for short-term political gain, because both have been approached largely by big businesses, but it's not entirely big businesses. Many business owners that use and want a cheap and compliant labor force, to put that in plain English, they want a large number of illegal aliens here. And they would like to get them legal so they don't have any trouble. They know they're breaking the law. It's a lot of wink, wink, nod, nod going on. That's why they want this cleaned up. So they go to Washington hat in hand and say, listen, here's the deal. We'll provide you millions, tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars in campaign contributions from the executives of these corporations, from their trade associations. But in exchange, we want you to support a comprehensive immigration reform bill. That's what they want. And it's both Republicans and Democrats. Now, the Democrats push this. Yeah, they're getting campaign contributions. But the reason why it's really one of their top priorities, I would say number one or number two, is they truly understand and make no bones about it that once comprehensive immigration reform goes through, that it's simply a matter of time, I would say 5 to 10 years at most, before the political payoff really pays off. And what they perceive that will happen is both the House of Representatives and the Senate and the presidency will be controlled by people that are members of the Democratic Party that support this. And you got to understand, it's not 11 million. It's at least 30 to 50 million to start. And if you doubt me, we went through a similar process in the 80s. The numbers that they were talking about then was 1 million people. We got to give amnesty to 1 million people. Remember, the U.S. population was much smaller. Today, it's at 318 million. Then it was under 200 million, under 200 million. So 1 million was a lot of people. But who actually got amnesty? What was the net result? Approximately 3 million people. And the deal then was, and the Democrats agreed to it, the Republicans agreed to it, this will be the last time that we'll have amnesty. From here on out, the immigration laws of the United States will be enforced. We will secure the borders. Did it happen? No, it didn't. What happened is the Democrats welched on the deal, and so did the Republicans in terms of the American people, because many of the big supporters of open borders are Republican, largely progressive Republicans, including George Bush that lives in Dallas. Dallas is a sanctuary city, a sanctuary city. It is a magnet for illegal immigration, or what I call illegal aliens, because technically that's exactly what they are, and they've been called that for hundreds of years. They're aliens. They're foreign born. They did not enter the United States illegally. That's why they're called illegal aliens. And the law is very clear. If you enter the United States illegally, you should and will be deported. You don't have the legal status to work in the United States. And ladies and gentlemen, that's what the majority of you, no matter what your political party, Democrat or Republican, whether you're a progressive, a liberal, a conservative, a libertarian, a Tea Party member, not all, but a large percentage, 3 out of 4 minimum, want illegal immigration stopped. And it's a very selfish reason, or a better way to say it, they have their self-interest at heart. People are, there are literally over 25 million Americans today, over 25 million Americans today that are looking for a permanent full-time job. Now, I'd be the first to say, if we were at a full employment rate of under 3%, 3% or under, I'd be willing to discuss, let's say, raising the number of legal immigration into this country. But we're not there. We're probably 5 years away, 5 years away to getting back to an unemployment rate in the 3 to 4% range. Remember, it's at 7.3%. Because at minimum, it will take 3 years to reduce the unemployment rate by 3%. And that's under optimistic conditions and not a situation where the labor participation rate is going down. You see, you know the economy is truly recovering if every month the economy, in terms of, they do two surveys, the one that gives you the number of non-farm payrolls is called the establishment survey. Some call it the business survey because it's surveying largely businesses. Where if you were getting over 300,000, but 400,000, 500,000, 600,000, then over a three-year period, you could get it from 7.3%, which it is today, down to under 4%. Because if you were, the reports were showing those numbers, you would see the decline, but you would see also one other thing. The labor participation rate would be going up. So it would be in the 66 to 67% range. And that's what you want to see. You want to see the unemployment rate, the U3 as well as the U6 rate. The U3 is the official or headline number. The U6 is the total unemployment rate. You would like to see both of those rates going down as the labor participation rate goes up, up, and up, and is in the 66 to 67% range or higher. That would be a good news scenario, a very good news scenario. We're not close to that. My problem is I've studied this. So I listen to someone on the news. Oh, wasn't it terrific? And this is a guy selling, he's a financial planner, and I used to be one. And he has a radio show here in Dallas. Oh, isn't it terrific? And he got the number wrong. Well, there are 208,000 jobs created in October. Well, it was 204. Okay. I make those mistakes too. Maybe he misspoke. He forgot. I'm not going to quibble about 4,000. But that's good news. It is, but not really. It's way below 300,000, and that's the minimum you need to get down. If you did that 300,000 jobs for 3 years, at the end of 3 years, the unemployment rate would be under 4%. But that's what it's going to take, those kind of numbers. And really, you want more because you want to do this quick. We really can't wait for 3 years. We've been in this situation since 2008. So 2008, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. In less than 60 days, we've had 6 years of these higher, very high unemployment rates, whether you measure it by U3 or U6. Yet what are both political parties spending time on and will probably push next year? A comprehensive immigration reform bill. And what is the impact on the labor supply of that bill if it were to pass the House and Senate? it would dramatically increase the supply of labor in the United States. It would continue, the United States would remain a magnet for illegal immigration. It wouldn't shut it down. It would attract more people. It's doing that right now. More and more people are coming to the United States illegally. It's not enforcing the law. And I say that because both political parties really, as much as they like to say, you know, we're for the underdog, we're for the working Americans, we're for the middle class or low income, they're not. Because if they were, they wouldn't support comprehensive immigration reform. They would be demanding, pounding on the table, the deportation of illegal aliens. Are they doing that? No, they're not. Neither party are doing it. They start the conversation, well, we have 11 million, exactly 11 million, illegal immigrants that we want to get out of the shadows. They're spinning it. They're lying to you. They think you're that stupid to buy their propaganda, to buy their spin. It's like spitting in your face. That's what they're doing. That is what they're doing. Who are they hurting? They're hurting you. They're hurting me. They're hurting your family, your friends, your neighbors, people that were born, raised, educated in the United States. And the overwhelming majority of the people being hurt are the young people. The young people. Because they're competing with unskilled labor. Many of them illiterate, can't speak a word of English, or very little English. Can't read or write, many of them in their own language, wherever they came from. Those illegal aliens take the unskilled jobs. That's janitor jobs, landscaping jobs, construction jobs, meatpacking jobs. We're talking what used to be described and still is manual labor. Low-income, low-skill jobs. First-time jobs. Part-time jobs. And it's also stocking shelves in retail stores. See, that's what's sad. There is a basic disconnect from your representatives, whether it's the House or the Senate, and what you would like to see done and what they say they are going to do to you. And they're doing it largely to keep political power, to keep their House seat or their Senate seat or the presidency. And many of you applaud it and support it. When who does it hurt? Your children, your grandchildren. Not only in your family, your neighbors, your friends. Why do you think there's so many college students graduating today, many of them with tens of thousands of debt to get the college degree, and cannot find jobs, or if they can, it's part-time, and where you don't need a college education? You see, there was a long period in the United States from the 20s through the late 60s when immigration, legal immigration, was tightly controlled. The numbers allowed in each year, and I might be a little off on the number, were 167,000. And then we had immigration reform in the 60s. And the Democrats said, don't worry, these numbers aren't going to go up. We're just changing who can get in. And the Democrats controlled the House, the Senate, and the presidency. They passed it. And what happened? More than 160,000 were let in. Now, why am I relating that history? When did you see the most improvement in the standard of living of the American people? And this includes the Great Depression. It was during that period, mainly after World War II, where we strictly enforce immigration law, both legal and illegal. If you were here illegal, you were deported. You were rounded up and sent back. That was the best period of time to be an American worker. Those were the golden years. Those were the boom years. And that's where the American people made the most progress in their standard of living. That has stopped. That has stopped. And part of the problem for it is the influx of not 1 million or 10 million, but tens of millions of illegal aliens coming here, half of them at least staying after their visa expires, and the other half coming from Central America and South America over the Mexican-U.S. border. And you would, and it's the job of the federal government to enforce federal U.S. immigration law. It's not doing it. It's not doing it. Not rigorously. Not vigorously. Because if it were, what would happen? You should be seeing the unemployment rate go down. It hasn't really been happening, has it? There's a reason for it. They weren't deported. And I'm not saying 100% of the answer is the deportation of illegal aliens. The point I'm trying to make is a good number, I would say at least half of the job, the poor job situation that we have now can be directly attributed to that influx of illegal aliens. It's basic economics. The supply of labor, that curve is shifted to the right. In other words, we've had more and more people entering the labor force as they either come here by plane and overstay their visa or they cross the U.S.-Mexican border. They also cross the Canadian border, but that's not the major problem. Some are just sneaking through the coast. And I'm getting on to this because I've given up on the Republican Party. And there are several issues why they left me. Where did they leave me? One is, as a libertarian or classical liberal, some would describe me as a conservative. One of a core principles that I have in terms of what the federal government should do is be fiscally responsible. In other words, not just occasionally balance the budget every year, without fail. That hasn't been done. Both political parties over the last 12 years have increased what's called the deficit, where government outlays exceed revenues, where government outlays, spending has exceed taxes. And it's not a small margin. See, at one time, there were many, many years where that happened, but the percentage was very, very small. Not anymore. Right now, upwards of a third of spending has to be financed by debt, not by taxes. And any debt you issue has to pay interest on it. And see, what's going on is this. Why much of the Treasury securities in the past, virtually all of it, was purchased by financial institutions, some in the United States, some abroad, some central banks from other countries. It was not purchased by the Federal Reserve or the Central Bank of the United States. That's what's going on now. That's clearly what's going on now. And you can see it in the balance sheet of the Federal Reserve. That's printing money or creating money. And that's dangerous because it can get out of control. Inflation can suddenly pick up, dramatically pick up, because that's what you're doing. You're creating money. Now, the Fed's answer to that, well, we could always control it. We can up the reserve. We could double the reserves that they have to, the ratio of the reserves they have to. Well, yeah, they can. They're probably going to be too late when they do it, but they can. Eventually, they wake up. They've not been on top of this, folks. They have not. We've had a monetary policy for starting in, well, I want to say 2008, but that's not really correct. We've had a near zero interest rate since December of 2008. Near zero means 25 basis points or 0.25%. That's the overnight federal funds rate, the rate that commercial banks charge each another if for a short-term loan, a 24-hour loan. That is a very much a controlled, manipulated number. Usually it's 4, 5, 6%, not 0.25%, and never for this long period. So you've had a combination of low rates, and the reason why it's low is they want to be able to finance the federal government at low interest rates, so they keep the federal funds rate low. That's what's going on. But what does that enable the banks to do? Because they have these reserves. It dramatically increases the spread between what they have to pay and what they loan it out. Now, many of these banks, especially the ones that are too big to fail, they needed to rebuild their capital because what happened? Their assets on their balance sheet dramatically decreased. Many of them were probably insolvent. So they haven't been lending it out. You know, you can't make a broad generalization. Yes, some banks have. But the ones in serious trouble have not. And to the extent they've done lending at all, it's at high rates. It's a big spread. See, the bankers have made out. Many of them that should have been put out of business were not. We don't really have a true free enterprise market system in the banking. We have a lot of banks, and many of them, hundreds, have gone out of business, and they should have gone out of business. But many of the biggest, the so-called too big to fail, haven't. They keep on failing. But it impacts you. It does impact you. And what I'm fearful of, well, it's twofold. There are two scenarios here. One is we go into a recession that could become a deeper depression if it's worldwide. And remember, almost all, if not all, central banks today are engaged in printing money or creating money, whatever term you like to use. The phrase you'll hear in the news is QE, quantitative easing. They're all doing it. And their justification is, well, we got to keep the demand up, the aggregate demand up. That's the theory. And we haven't seen great price increases. No, but you have seen another asset bubble being created in the stock market, because everyone knows, or should know, that once the Federal Reserve has to revert back to a tight monetary policy, if inflation comes roaring back, what's going to happen? Stock market's going to go down like a rock. You're going to have another crash. So is the bond market going to go down. There's an inverse relationship between bond yields and prices. So if bond yields go up, in other words, when you issue a new bond, you have to pay a much higher interest rate. What happens to the prices of all bonds or existing bonds? They have to go down. And that, what's that going to do to banks? Because they're big holders of bonds, especially mortgage-backed securities or bonds. Those bonds are going to sink like a rock. In other words, this so-called easy monetary policy, this accommodative monetary policy, whose main objective is financing the debt or the deficits of the U.S. government, that policy, when it has to go the other way, will be devastating. And at some point, they're going to have to tighten that monetary policy. And at that point, the cost of the federal government to borrow money will go up. The cost of everybody's interest rates, whether it's a mortgage, a car loan, you name it, will go up, dramatically go up. It's only a matter of time. So the Fed has bought time, so we don't have a total disaster, but they can't continue to play this game. Now, they've said they will taper. And by what they mean by that, tapering means buying less Treasury securities and mortgage-backed securities of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. We'll see. I don't think they can. And I say that because the U.S. economy is on the brink of another recession. I don't know when it's going to be. I would say it's a good chance within the next 2 years. And once that hits, they literally cannot taper. They're going to have a QE4 with even more being bought. Why? To finance the federal government. That is their mindset. That's why I say they don't have an exit strategy at all. If the economy goes into a recession, they literally cannot taper. They will increase their bond purchases. Conversely, if inflation comes roaring back, what happens then? The federal government gets squeezed because they're going to have to pay more and more interest on their debt when they roll it over, which means less and less money can go to the other federal departments and programs and agencies. That's the so-called ticking time bomb. Now, what are our political class in Washington talking about? Are they talking about this? Not really. They're talking about comprehensive immigration reform that hurts Americans, hurts the American worker. Can you believe it? Our own representatives are selling out the people of the United States so they can stay in power, so they can get campaign contributions. And yes, it's from some of the largest businesses in the United States that are doing this. But who gets hurt? The American worker gets hurt. Ladies and gentlemen, they don't care about you. They don't care about Obamacare, and they don't care about illegal immigration. As far as President Obama is concerned, Obamacare was a success. What was the objective of the Democratic Party with passing Obamacare? It was eliminating all existing health insurance plans, whether it's bought by an individual, a small group or employer, or a large group. And they will accomplish their objective in the next 13 months. They're gone because all plans will have to comply with the new regulations promulgated by the Department of Health and Human Services. So they've eliminated, they haven't increased competition at all. They've eliminated all those plans and all those companies that have sold them. And now if you want to be in the insurance business, the only plans you can buy are Obamacare plans that are significantly more expensive. And why are they doing this? And they're trying to blame it on the insurance company. It's not the insurance company's fault. Who passed this law? Not one Republican had voted for Obamacare. Why? They knew where this was leading. Obamacare is a stepping stone to single payer. And I bring it up because what has been the impact of Obamacare? People are losing their jobs. They might be full-time and now are part-time. That has been one of the major impacts of Obamacare. That's why many of these new jobs that are created are not full-time. They're part-time. Why? What are employers doing? They're saying, well, this insurance is a lot more expensive. I can't afford to have all my workers get this. So I'm telling more and more of my workers they're going to have to be part-time workers. Or I'm not hiring any more full-time workers. Either you're not going to be able to get a job, or if you can get a job, it's part-time. And if it's part-time, you don't get coverage. And then you're going to have to buy your own. Again, who's being hurt? The American people. Everybody. Now, some of you are fortunate that have the money, have good paying jobs, and can afford it. Your employers can afford it, or you can afford it. Congratulations. But the people that are really being affected today are the young, who can't find good paying jobs. They're the ones that are going to really pay the price. And that was the objective of Obamacare, to force. The word they use is mandate. Mandate's a fancy legal word for force. Coerce you to buy this. This is unprecedented. Never in the history of the United States has the federal government told you, you must buy something. This is a first. Now, what I'm recommending for young people in particular, especially if you don't have any health problems, don't buy it. Simply don't buy it. They can't legally force you to buy it. They can try to get you to pay a penalty. Don't pay the penalty. Don't pay the penalty, because at least right now, the only way they can collect that penalty, the only way, is if you have a refund, and then it'll take it out of the refund. So I'm calling for massive disobedience, because what's happening? We have a ruling elite in Washington, both Republicans and Democrats, that are not listening to you. So occasionally, you got to hit them over the heads to get their attention. And the way you do that is to throw them out of office. And not just Democrats, but Republicans as well. Now, to the Republicans' party credit, not one of them voted for Obamacare. So some of these people have done the right thing. But what you also need to check up on, though, how many of these same people that didn't vote for Obamacare are in favor of comprehensive immigration reform? Because that has a greater impact on your employment opportunities than just Obamacare. Both of them are negative, have negative consequences in terms of whether or not you're going to be able to find a job. If you ask me what are the two things you could do right now to improve the employment situation, it's very clear. Repeal Obamacare, enforce the immigration laws, and three, balance the budget. Is that what the majority, is that what either party is calling for? Well, one party is calling for the repeal of Obamacare. I'll give them one out of three. And they talk a good game about balancing the budget. And the problem there is, if you look at their budgets, it takes 10 years before they balance. We don't have 10 years. This thing is going to blow up. I'm going to have to wrap it up. So I'll come back to this tomorrow. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk. the presenter of the Prog Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. Thank you for listening. I'll be back with my hour show tomorrow, I believe at 3. Thank you. Have a good evening.